This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehia Suhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
She's the first candidate of African descent, the first candidate of Asian descent to receive a party's nomination for president. It's the first time we've had a candidate bow out less than a month before the convention and then an online and telephone canvassing of delegates to change the nominee. She's the first Democratic candidate from the Western United States.
That's William Lawrence, professor of political science at the American University in Washington, on how Kamala Harris has broken new ground for presidential candidates. Details coming up. Also, the Democratic National Convention concludes tonight with a speech from Harris. And Egyptian journalists increasingly are concerned about the jailing of their colleagues. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. Our top story, Minnesota Governor Tim Walz accepted his party's nomination as vice president during the third day of the Democratic National Convention. VOA Midwest correspondent Kane Fabo has more from Chicago.
Opening the third day of Democrats' National Convention in Chicago, U.S. Senator Cory Booker from New Jersey outlined the night's theme.
Welcome to night three, and tonight is about freedom.
While some of the programming provided speakers opportunities to address topics including reproductive rights, environmental issues, and border security, much of the messaging focused on what Democrats say is the choice in the November election.
Kamala Harris for the people. And the other guy who's proved even more than the first go-around, that he's about me, myself, and I.
Former President Bill Clinton was one of the most anticipated speakers of the evening. Clinton, who has attended every convention for Democrats since 1972, drew from his own experience in the White House to explain why he believes Vice President Kamala Harris is the best choice for president.
Kamala Harris will work to solve our problems, seize our opportunities, ease our fears, and make sure every single American, however they vote, has a chance to chase their dreams.
But the key moment for Democrats was hearing from Minnesota Governor Tim Walz, who accepted his party's nomination as vice president.
It's the honor of my life to accept your nomination for vice president of the United States.
For many in the crowd, and those watching the convention around the country, Walz's speech was a sort of introduction.
Now, I grew up in Butte, Nebraska, a town of 400 people. I had 24 kids in my high school class, and none of them went to Yale. But I'll tell you what, growing up in a small town like that, you'll learn how to take care of each other.
Walz, a military veteran, former teacher, and American high school football and basketball coach, highlighted how these parts of his personal biography prepared him for a life in politics.
But it was those players and my students who inspired me to run for Congress. They saw in me what I had hoped to instill in them, a commitment to the common good, an understanding that we're all in this together. And the belief that a single person can make a real difference for their neighbors.
As the final speaker, Walz punctuated the freedom theme of the night.
But when we Democrats talk about freedom, we mean the freedom to make a better life for yourself and the people that you love. Freedom to make your own health care decisions. And yeah, your kids' freedom to go to school without worrying about being shot dead in the hall.
Democrats wrap up this convention on Thursday evening with a marquee moment, the acceptance speech of the party's nominee, Vice President Kamala Harris. Kane Fairbaugh, VOA News, from the Democratic National Convention in Chicago.
In talking to VOA's Carol Van Dam covering the Democratic National Convention in Chicago, I first asked her to share with us the overriding themes she observed yesterday evening at the convention.
Clearly, the Democrats were talking freedom last night. They were kind of using the name of that song by Beyonce, Freedom, which is all about liberation and kind of reclaiming, you know, the patriotic theme, saying, you know, it's not just Republicans who can talk about freedom, because we're the ones that are really talking about freedom for most Americans, middle class Americans. And the message really was kind of saying, you know, they're going to be taking you into darkness. We are talking about a bright future and bringing in the light. So, you know, all week Democrats have been doing that. But two of the biggest speakers last night, of course, were former President Bill Clinton, one of the most popular presidents in recent memory in this country, and Tim Walz himself, a running mate to Kamala Harris. He's a former school teacher. He's a former football coach for a small high school in Minnesota. And he before he became a state congressman and then governor of Minnesota, and he carried on with that theme of freedom. But one of the things that he said was, you know, when we talk about freedom as opposed to Republicans, we're talking about freedom of a woman's choice to do what she wants with her body and not have, you know, the Republicans in the room with their conversation with their doctors about their reproductive health rights. He also said it was the freedom for middle-class Americans to do what they want with their livelihoods and become successful and not, you know, have more problems taking care of higher taxes that he said will be imposed on them by Republicans. They could make a better life for themselves and also have health care coverage, unlike Republicans who want to take that away from them, he said.
Certainly the vice president brings a lot of energy to the stage when he was appearing at the convention yesterday evening. And Carol, who were the other speakers? Talk to us about Bill Clinton and who else was there?
Yeah, I wanted to mention, too, when you mentioned about all the energy when Tim Walz got there, this was the first time that he was in such a huge audience. I mean, he's been doing these rallies with Kamala Harris since it was just announced a few short weeks ago. She picked him to be her running mate. But this is tens and tens and tens of thousands. It's a huge arena, and people weren't sure, you know, he'd be ready. One of the things that was kind of funny to learn is that he never even used a teleprompter to read his speeches and had to practice that for this past week in order to be comfortable with it. And with Bill Clinton, what he talked about, one of his big zinger lines was, you know, Donald Trump, the Republican nominee, only talks about himself. That's what he cares about. He doesn't care about other people. And he said, the next time you listen to Donald Trump, don't count the lies, count the eyes. In other words, he's always talking about himself. And let me just say that in terms of the other speakers, we also heard from former House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, who is one of the most instrumental voices in convincing President Joe Biden to step aside for his vice president, Kamala Harris. And she was more muted, but she has something to say, too. She's still a congresswoman in the House of Representatives, but she stepped aside as far as her House speakership. And she's pretty close in age to Joe Biden. They're old friends. And when she came to him and talked to him and asked him to think twice about stepping aside, that seemed to really make a difference.
VOA's Carol Van Dam reporting from the Democratic National Convention in Chicago. Following another night of energetic speeches from big-name politicians, the 2024 Democratic National Convention heads into its last evening today in Chicago. Some of the notable speakers so far have included President Joe Biden, former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, former President Barack Obama, and former First Lady Michelle Obama. I asked Todd Belt, professor and director of political management at George Washington University, if there has been a common theme or message.
Well, I think there really has. And there are two things that they are doing in terms of two different themes. And those are, first, helping the voters get to know who Kamala Harris and Tim Walz are from a personal standpoint. And secondly, convincing voters that they are ready to take on the job And I think those are the two key themes that they've been pushing at the convention.
So far, Professor, do the speakers seem to be able to attract undecided and independent voters?
Well, this is a convention that is for the party members. And as such, it's really meant for getting the enthusiasm going for the members of the party. However, it is also broadcast to the rest of the nation. And there are two things that the party wants to do in order to convince those independent voters. And that is, number one, show that the party has better ideas for helping those independent voters and making their lives better. And number two, showing that the party is unified and can win. And so those are the two things they're trying to do. And so far, it looks like they've been pretty close to message on those things.
How about younger voters?
I think younger voters are a key group that the Democrats are trying to attract. They really gave the presidency to Joe Biden in 2020, voters of the ages of 18 to 29, plus voters of color. And I've seen in this convention, you see more of those people speaking from those two groups and talking about how Kamala Harris represents them and their interests. And so I would say that they are continuing the trend that these groups actually got most excited by Kamala Harris replacing Biden on the ticket, and they're trying to continue the enthusiasm throughout this convention, and it's been pretty obvious they're being targeted.
And there have been some surprising speakers at the Chicago National Democratic National Convention, members of the Republican Party, including, I'm sure you're aware, Stephanie Grisham, a former high-level staffer in the Trump White House, Adam Kinzinger, a right. former Republican member of Congress, Ana Navarro, a well-known Republican, you know, political commentator. What's going on here, Professor? How usual is it for members of the opposing party to speak at a U.S. political convention?
It is extremely unusual. Most of these people don't feel comfortable speaking to the members of the other party. I mean, they are, of course, strong members of their own party. But Donald Trump did something to the Republican Party that we have not seen. He has completely taken it over. And in a lot of ways, he has undermined a lot of the things that the Republican Party stood for. And that's why we've seen this. But the idea of someone who is what we would call a convert coming from one party to the other is something that has been occasionally highlighted at these conventions, but it's usually just one person, not a group of them. And that's what the Democrats are trying to show, that there is a group of Republicans, strong Republicans, many of whom actually worked for Donald Trump, who do not believe that he is fit for the office anymore.
That was Todd Belt, professor and director of political management at George Washington University, speaking with me from Washington, D.C. The Democratic National Convention will conclude its energetic gathering with a speech from the party's candidate for president, Kamala Harris, after adopting its bold vision for America's future theme. William Lawrence, professor of political science at the American University in Washington, discussed with VOA senior analyst Mohammed Al-Shanawi whether the convention has boosted Harris's stance as a qualified candidate able to win over American voters.
It definitely has. She's getting the famous convention bump, which often occurs after conventions in American politics. And this one will probably be larger than the regular convention bumps, which will often add 3 to 5 points to someone's polling numbers. So today's day four, the concluding night, and speeches will be tonight. She's going to emphasize three themes in her speech tonight. Number one, sort of telling her life story. Number two, contrasting herself with Donald Trump. And number three, this whole theme of patriotism and freedom, which ironically, the Democrats have sort of appropriated from the Republicans, because the Republicans used to talk about patriotism and freedom, and now they talk about despair and decline. And so it's funny watching the Democrats, how Republican at the convention sounds. It's a historic historic convention. She's the first candidate of African descent, the first candidate of Asian descent to receive a party's nomination for president. It's the first time we've had a candidate bow out less than a month before the convention, and then an online and telephone canvassing of delegates to change the nominee. She's the first Democratic candidate from the Western United States. So there's just a lot of unprecedented things going on here that we've never seen before. And then, as you mentioned, the level of celebration we've never seen before. Live performances of very high quality from John Mayer, Sheena Easton, and speeches by people like Stevie Wonder and John Legend's there. And every state had a different song when it presented its delegates. So I've never seen such a celebratory, music-filled party atmosphere at a convention. And it's working. American conventions, they don't actually pick the nominee. The nominee's already picked. The point of the convention is to have the formal nomination, present the party platform, and build unity in the party. And what we're seeing in the dozens and dozens and dozens of speakers who are speaking is a lot of young Democrats, the next generation of leaders, by the dozens, giving very impressive speeches. Nothing like the Republican convention, where very few young leaders were speaking. Also, the ratings are very high. 20 million viewers the first night, similar numbers tonight. These are huge numbers for a political meeting on television. And that's helping Kamala Harris raise $400 million this month. So a lot of this is just unprecedented.
So what do you make of the Obama's call on voters not to be complacent after having an energetic convention?
Obama's sort of saying, you know, don't despair, don't check out. Things can get better if you engage in politics despite all this negative language. And on the opposite side, there's a problem of overconfidence, because Kamala Harris is doing so well. She's raising so much money. She's so popular. She's filling stadiums with much larger crowds than Trump now. There's a chance that people just say, because, you know, a lot of Americans don't vote. 50% of Americans at least don't vote in the elections. And so there's a risk that people will just feel, okay, she's going to win. I don't need to get in line. And also, a lot of people need to work on the campaign. There are millions of volunteers that have volunteered since she became the nominee, but that doesn't mean they're actually going to do what they volunteered for. So he's basically saying, or to quote James Carville, who is an advisor to Bill Clinton, when he was talking to a group of Democratic organizers, he said, you guys have won August. You have to win November. And that's the message that Obama's saying. You haven't won this. It looks good, but you haven't won it yet.
That was William Lawrence, professor of political science at the American University in Washington, speaking with VOA's Mohammed El-Shenawy. You're listening to Africa News Tonight. I'm Yeheyes Wuhib in Washington. For more information on these and other stories from the continent, please see voaafrica.com. There you'll find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. For world news, check out voanews.com. Egyptian journalists increasingly are concerned about the jailing of their colleagues, many of whom are being held without trial. Angie Omar has the details from Cairo.
Carrying banners reading no to jailing and torturing journalists, protesters recently gathered at the Egyptian Journalist Syndicate office to demand the release of 23 imprisoned colleagues. They include freelance journalist Khaled Mamdouh and satirical cartoonist Ashraf Omar, who were detained and accused of being involved in a terrorist group disseminating false news and misusing social media tools. Ashraf Omar's wife, Nada Mourith, alleges he has been physically abused. She says he was abducted from their home by a very large number of security forces, no less than 10, who were in two vehicles. She says they abducted and blindfolded him and took his personal belongings, including his mobile phone and laptop. A source in the journalist syndicate, who did not give his name for safety reasons, said the syndicate has been negotiating with the prosecutor general's office for the release of the journalists, especially those held in pretrial detention. The head of the journalist syndicate, Khaled El-Balshi, said the Egyptian authorities have rejected at least 10 requests by the union to visit the jailed journalists. El-Balshi says the authorities have started to make the journalists feel deeply concerned because they no longer feel the hope they once did about getting their colleagues free quickly. Therefore, they must call for freedom for all detainees in opinion cases in this country and a comprehensive pardon for them. He says if the state desires real reform, real dialogue and everything, there must be decisions than the current review process. Egypt has been ranked among the world's worst jailers of journalists, tied with Turkey and Saudi Arabia. In 2023, according to the Committee to Protect Journalists, Egypt is ranked 170s out of 180s on the World Press Freedom Index. Justin Shilad is a Middle East and North Africa researcher for the Committee to Protect Journalists. He told VOA that repression of press freedom in Egypt is part of a broader pattern across the Middle East.
In Egypt, or what happens in one country in a region does not happen in a vacuum. It's a problem for the entire Middle East, North Africa region, and indeed the world. I think that with the authorities in this region, even those whom have significant conflicts with one another, they are very much reading from each other's playbooks in suppressing critical and independent media. And that's what's so disturbing about this case.
In a written statement, the Egyptian government defended its actions, saying it respects press freedom and the rights of journalists to practice their profession freely, as long as they abide by the law and do not engage in activities that threaten national security. The statement adds that the detained journalists are facing charges related to their involvement in terrorist activities and the dissemination of false information, which poses a threat to public order and safety. The government said the judicial process is being followed transparently and in accordance with the law. The protesters earlier this week vowed to continue their fight to free their colleagues and defend press freedom. Sizinji Omar, reporting for VOA from Cairo.
Botswana is putting on display one of the largest diamonds ever found, which was unearthed at one of its mines. The government thinks the 2,492-carat stone is the second biggest ever brought out of a mine. Canadian mining company Lucara Diamond Corporation said it recovered the rough diamond from its Karowe mine in Botswana. Lucara said it was a high-quality stone. The weight would make it the largest diamond found in more than 100 years and the second largest ever dug out of a mine after the Cullinan diamond discovered in South Africa in 1905. The Cullinan was 3,106 carats and was cut into gems, some of which form part of the British crown jewels. Botswana is the world's second largest diamond producer.
VOA Africa has a wide variety of programs for you. News, lifestyle, health, politics, youth, women, sports. We have it all. Tune into our discussion shows on the radio, television, and the internet on voaafrica.com.
Gunmen in northwestern Nigeria have killed an influential traditional ruler over delay in ransom payment days after he appeared in a video pleading for his release. Nigerian and international news media say Issa Bawa, the emir of Gobir in Soko State, was abducted 3 weeks ago along with his son on his way to his native town of Sabon Birni near the border with Niger. The kidnappers reportedly shot Bawa dead Tuesday, which was the deadline for a ransom payment. However, some Nigerian newspapers reported the family had prepared to deliver a ransom. Nigeria has long battled both an extremist insurgency in northern states and rising violent crime, especially kidnapping for ransom.
Join your host, Larry London, for Border Crossings, VOA's Worldwide Music Request Hour, every weekday at 1500 Universal. Tune in to hear your favorite songs and artists, win prizes and giveaways, and get the latest scoop from exclusive celebrity interviews. Send in requests to our Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram, or call 202-618-2077 to have your favorite music played for the entire world. Don't miss Border Crossings every weekday at 1500 Universal.
And with that, we wrap up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehia Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, David Van Dee, and our engineer, Adrius Rigas, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.